fun start in Montreal. I don't think this is what I was expecting. I recall our conversation. You had a rather optimistic tone, and I'm thinking, is this the same Habs team that I've seen operating the last few years? And it kind of has been, but it kind of hasn't. They have gone young. They have gone cheap. They have stunned many. It has not been Carey Price that's carried them to a 4-1-2 mark. They've actually beaten the Penguins twice. They got to overtime against the Leafs. This has been quite the ride in Montreal, I bet.
Yeah, and maybe one of the reasons why I was optimistic, although I remember saying that, you know, on paper there was no argument to make about this team being good, was the fact that I attended their training camp and saw what was being built in their locker room and the buy-in level from their players. And, you know, when you have a team that's constructed as the Montreal Canadiens are constructed, you need every single player on board in order to be successful. And they got that from day one of training camp, and I felt that they were going to surprise a lot of people off the hop. Whether or not they can sustain it is a matter of health, it's a matter of depth, and it's a matter of whether or not they can continue to play at the pace that they've been playing at. But so far, so good, and you really have to give the coaching staff credit, because when you have that level of buy-in, it means they're doing something right.
So what has gone right? How have they managed to win against some of the better teams in the NHL early on?
Yeah, I think it comes down to not really having passengers, but, you know, Carey Price, despite what the numbers say, has been better, certainly, than what he showed last year, and I think that's a work in progress for him to get back to where he was a couple years ago, and obviously a few years before that when he was, the guy who won all the trophies. But, you know, there's certain players here that have stepped up. There's just a commitment across the board. Not to repeat myself, but that's the main component. The other thing is the way Claude Julien is running his system. You know, the messages he sent right out of the gate, scratching Carl Alsner and Thomas Plekanec. You know, Alsner was on a 600 and I want to say 62 game Ironman streak. You know, that wasn't an easy way to end that. Thomas Plekanec was a couple games away from 1,000 in the NHL. Wasn't easy to sit him out, but the messages you send to your team and doing things like that and being willing to play the guys that you feel are going to give you the best opportunity to win, and not the guys that, oh, Alsner's got, you know, a 5-year, $23 million contract and he's only 1 year into it, and how's this going to look? None of that seemed to matter. So, you know, you always hear the word meritocracy when it comes to coaching. I think Claude Julien is running an authentic one. You know, Victor Mete is an example, a guy who sat out the last couple of games. He started with a minor injury, but was a healthy scratch in Ottawa on Saturday. And, you know, that ran cross-current to Claude Julien saying, we want to play fast, leaving Carl Alsner in his place. But, you know, the fact was that Victor Mete had been on the ice for the most 5-on-5 goals against for the Canadiens in the early part of the season. And there was some benefit to him maybe watching from the stands and just having a little reset, which, you know, he certainly took it that way. And when asked about it yesterday, Claude said, you know, you got to play the young players. That's what we're going to do. And he said he was considering and mulling over changes to his blue line. And sure enough, he made them again. And he's scratching Alsner again and putting Mete in. So that's what you want to see from a coach when you're a player. You want that fairness, and it's there.
Tell me about Jesperi Kotkaniemi, the third overall pick from last summer's draft. We knew he was going to start here. At least they told us that. But what has he looked like? And is this an absolute that he stays the whole season, or would they exercise some other options in terms of where they could send him to play?
Yeah, it's not an absolute at this point, but I'll tell you one thing. They're not concerned about the 9-game threshold here.
Sure.
In fact, Claude Julien said yesterday he hasn't even thought about it, and here we are at game 8 of the season. So he's going to pass that, and the reason why, and you know, you could look at his stats. He's got 3 assists through 7 games. It's nothing to write home about, so to speak. But, you know, that's not really what the end game is here. You know, you want to make sure that he's capable of playing at this level, that he's not feeling out of place or looking uncomfortable. And what you'll notice if you're in Calgary and this is the first time you're watching this kid play, his hockey sense is off the charts. He's positionally very smart. He's always in the right spot defensively. He 9 times out of 10 makes the right play with the puck. He has an anticipation level that is above board. I mean, these are the elements that had him picked third overall, not just the fact that the Canadiens wanted a top-flight center, and he was the best option available in this year's draft. He's got an NHL-level shot and one of the better ones you'll see if he gets it off. I think he needs to be a bit more selfish, which is a common issue with a young player coming in and playing with some good players. He's playing with Joel Armia and Paul Byron, who Calgarians know very well. And, you know, you just watch the hockey sense, the way he thinks the game, and that is what enables him to overcome the fact that he's very young, 18-year-old, you know, just turned 18 in July, and that he doesn't have an NHL frame yet, even though he's 6'2". He's got great reach, though. He can skate, even with an awkward skating stride, moves very well, and his shot is fantastic if you get to see it. So I'm very impressed with this kid. He's a lot better than I thought that he would be at this stage of the game. And if you want to project down the line in terms of what kind of player he's going to be, think Anze Kopitar, think Sasha Barkov out in Florida. That is what we're seeing from this guy right now.
Wow, heady stuff. And as you had noted in our last chat, I mean, boy, it's just been Death Valley in terms of centermen. Bergevin has tried time and time again to lure in top two centers, hasn't been able to do it. Now, that said, he's tried to convert some, and two are now playing on the same line. Domi and Drouin seem to look all right. At least the early returns aren't bad, especially lately for Drouin.
No, and, you know, I'll start with Domi because I was probably one of a handful of people who said the Canadiens outright won that trade on the day that they made it. And I'm not... You know, it's not about the production level and what it's going to be from, you know, in the first seven games of the season that I'm going to say, well, look at me, I'm right. You know, Alex Galchenyuk's making a season debut in Arizona. I think the being traded out of Montreal will certainly grow him up a bit too. And you know, he's got elite level talent. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Alex Galchenyuk becomes a 30-goal scorer again in Arizona. And, you know, when that deal was made, Max Domi had 36 career goals, and Alex Galchenyuk had a 30-goal season under his belt. So you could see why it was weighted towards Galchenyuk, especially with Montreal fans who were frustrated with the way the Canadiens used him over the years and felt that they hindered his development. You know, at the end of the day, the reason I felt that the Canadiens won this trade and the reason that I probably will feel that way every day that moves forward is Max Domi is just a better all-around hockey player. He's a guy that when you see him on a line with anybody, no matter who he's playing with, he does all the dirty work. And there's just an element of the way he thinks the game that I covet more in a hockey player. I think Galchenyuk, raw skill, and Domi is certainly really skilled, but he's off to a great start to the season. Galchenyuk, from a raw skill perspective, is a better player, but he doesn't think the game nearly as well as Max Domi does. So this was a great fit for Montreal. And Domi came here with 222 games of NHL experience or somewhere in that range. And he was just on the cusp of really understanding everything there is to understand about being a pro. And you're seeing that's the case here. And in a market like Montreal, where he felt that he would probably thrive, that he likes to be under that spotlight, he's proving that he's very comfortable under it. And at center, converted there, you know, it wasn't a great fit in Arizona. He wasn't well insulated. In Montreal, you could see he's on the right side of the puck all the time, and it's not affecting his offensive numbers the way it did in Arizona. So we'll see if he can sustain that. Jonathan Drouin got off to a tough start but really picked it up over the last few games. A bit of a ghost on Saturday against Ottawa, but he'll rebound. You know, the skill is there, the speed is there, the confidence is coming up a level, and there's chemistry forming with Arturi Lehkonen and with Max Domi. So that's an interesting line for Montreal right now.
Boy, it is still very, very early in the Carl Alzner contract. This is year 2 of 5. He's making north of 4.5 per year, and he's been healthy scratched with considerable regularity this season. What went wrong in that dealing with Alzner? Because it's funny, he's a guy that has a home in Calgary in the summer and has got some roots here and said, yeah, Montreal was really the only team I was talking to. They were bidding against themselves, and they gave him a 7-team limited no-trade clause and huge dough and a 5-year term. It has not gone well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they were quite bidding against themselves, no matter what Carl says. There was a few teams that were interested, and one team out west actually offered a 4-year deal to him. So, but at the same time, you know, Mark Bergevin, who I had a chance to interview at the beginning of the season on a piece we ran on sportsnet.ca, you know, told me that, you know, nobody ever thought that Carl Alzer was going to come here and be some sort of offensive dynamo and a great puck-moving defenseman. What they were buying in him was some reliability, which he had shown for the majority of his time in Washington. That said, you know, he's aware that you overpay in free agency, and I think he chose the wrong guy to overpay on. And, you know, the fact that he stood behind Claude Julien in the decision that was made early in the season to scratch Alzner, and he was scratched for the first five games, you know, that speaks to Bergevin's willingness to admit that he made a mistake there. But at the same time, he wants to give Alzner the opportunity to prove that he's better than what he showed last year. And I think the difficult thing for Alzner is, you know, he sits out the first five games, which is definitely a shot to his confidence. He finally gets into a game last week against St. Louis and plays a pretty good game. And sure enough, in Ottawa, it's back to what we saw from him last year. And the minute he makes one big mistake, it ends up in the net behind Carey Price. And it was a, you know, pivotal first goal for the Senators in a game where he gave away the puck behind the net. And his confidence was rattled from that point forward, and you could see it plain as day. So I'm not sure where this goes. You know, I'm not sure, you know, with the depth that the Canadians have on the blue line, they're going to have some decisions to make when Shea Weber returns, which could happen, you know, sometime in the next month, even though it's projected to be in December. Are they willing to put Carl Alzner in the minors? I really think they might be. You know, this reminds me a bit of Wade Redden, you know, who went to New York and signed that big deal, and he was a different player before he got there, but you could kind of see it was coming apart, but still people thought, you know, he'd be reliable enough to be there, and sure enough, you know, 2 years into the deal or 1 year into the deal, he's in the minors. So, tough situation. Carl Alzner is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in hockey. He took a lot of abuse last year, not only in the fan base, but from the media too, and you know, acknowledged that it came from the play that he put on the ice, and it wasn't good. So, you know, you always cheer for guys to turn it around and rebound, at least I do. And unfortunately, you know, I'm not sure that's going to be a possibility for this player who was never fleet of foot and doesn't bring much else to the table in terms of offense. And from a defensive perspective, has been struggling since he landed in Montreal.
What's Tomas Tatar look like? He's got 8 points through seven games and certainly was not a fit in Vegas, despite looking like a nice piece when he was in Detroit. It just didn't fit whatever reason in Vegas. It seems like that's not the case in Montreal.
Yeah, well, the thing that made me laugh is recently somebody, you know, tweeted like or replied to me on one of my tweets and said, you know, don't get too excited about what Tatar is doing right now. It's a small sample. The small sample was the 20 games in Vegas. He was a pretty good player in Detroit for the majority of his career, and he's 27 years old in the thick of his prime. It's not as if he was going to fall off the map. And he's not going to sustain getting more points than games played. You know, he's got a 56-point career high in Detroit a few years back, so nobody expects that. But what Tomas Tatar has proven in a short time in Montreal is that he plays very hard all over the ice, and that he's great at protecting the puck. He's really heavy on the puck, and he's a playmaker. He can shoot the puck. He can score goals. And he's served as a pretty good replacement for Max Pacioretty. He may not score as many goals, although he may score more considering what Pacioretty's done so far in Vegas with some good players. Nonetheless, with Paul Stastny going down, I'm sure that's affected his production, and it's early in the season, like you said. But, you know, you talked about the center depth in Montreal and how much of that's been a problem for a long time. All of a sudden, you know, Ryan Poehling was chosen in 2017, and he looks like he's going to be a heck of a two-way player, probably a really high-end third-line center down the line, possibly as early as next season or even later this season once he's done at St. Cloud his junior year and probably forego his senior year and get signed. And you have Nick Suzuki, who came over in the Pacioretty deal, which made that a winning deal for Montreal, you know, in terms of how tough of a situation they were in publicly with Pacioretty and the fact that they had to trade him. And then you add Tatar into the mix and a second-round pick, well, it looks like a really good deal for Montreal. So, you know, all of a sudden you have Suzuki, Poehling, and Kotkaniemi up the middle, and Tatar playing very well, you know, for what he's being paid, and Vegas also retained salary on the deal that they made there. Yeah, I mean, Tomas Tatar is a good player, and he's going to continue to be a good player, whether he produces at this level or not.
Last one for you as we are chatting with Eric Engels, our Sportsnet reporter in Montreal, all things Habs, as the Flames and the Habs will face off tonight at 5:30 Calgary time. I followed the career of Mike Riley a bit because he actually came up to Canada and played in Penticton, a team that I called games for on the radio way back in his junior A days. He went to Minnesota and now finds himself in Montreal. What does he look like? Because I always thought this was a guy that could think it and zip it around enough to be able to create offense as a blue liner in the NHL.
He's the biggest surprise. He's the biggest surprise with the Canadiens this year, and he may have answered a long-standing question since P.K. Subban was traded for Shea Weber, which is who's going to be able to play with Shea Weber. And the fact that Mike Riley has emerged as that guy at 25 years old is a total shocker, because we didn't see this last year, even though his minutes were up with a Canadiens team that was absolutely beaten and battered at the end of the season and had so many guys down to injury that he was playing that much. I asked him in Toronto where this newfound confidence has come from, and what he said to me is probably the favorite thing I've heard anybody say to me this year was, I don't have any coaches in my ear right now telling me I can't do this or can't do that or can't rush the puck or can't join the rush or can't be active in the offensive zone. And, you know, it seems to me in Minnesota, behind some very good defensemen, he was averaging 12 minutes a game and probably being told all the time, don't take too many risks. The day that he was traded to Montreal last year on the deadline, I reached out to a Western Conference scout and said, what's the skinny on this guy? And what I got back was, he's a 6'7" who skates really well and has good offensive instincts, but can't defend for his life. Well, all of a sudden, when some confidence has been showed to him and he's been given the ice time and being given the role and the green light is on, well, he's a new school NHL defenseman who appears to be a pretty good one. Let's see if he can sustain it over time. If he can, he completely changes the dynamic of the Canadiens' blue line. So that's found gold for them in the early part of the season. And if he keeps it up before Weber comes back, well, there's a guy who's an ideal partner for Shea Weber.
Always good catching up. Should be fun tonight. And I got an idea for you. Take a look of the parallels between Sam Bennett and Max Domi's career. Great rookie years and struggling to find an identity after that, and both off to better starts this year. Maybe you could do a piece for us. I'll give you a small fee. Maybe we'll get you a bottle of wine. Look into it, would you?
Well, I'll stoke the fire a little bit here. I think, you know, Calgary is going to look at moving Sam Bennett at one point down the line here if it doesn't turn around. And if they do, I can't help but wonder if Montreal would be a fit. I think they would like to have a player like that. I think they have a couple of offensive players in Charles Hudon and Nikita Sherbak who can't find their way into the top three lines right now because they're playing well, but have that skill and ability to score at that level. So there could be a fit there, and that's not based on any inside information, but I know that the Canadiens are looking to potentially move forward, and I can't help but wonder if Calgary is listening on Sam Bennett right now.